On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you vulnerable enough to, like, cry when you feel bad? Or would you hold it in?
I didn't think I could cry. And what concerned me was I was becoming so busy that I went to my first girlfriend. She was my first. I went to her funeral because she passed away.
Oh, wow.
And when I went there, I couldn't cry because literally I had somebody that was waiting for me outside to finish some interview and documentary thing I was doing. So I'm like, hold up. Like, I got to slow my life down. I wasn't able to cry. I wasn't able to feel. And when I went to my father's gravesite, I cried. And I didn't know that I would, or, like, if not, I would have been troubled if I didn't. I cried, and then I was, like, joyfully crying because I'm like, yes, I cried. Like, I can't believe it. Like, I feel something.
And good. I let it out.
I'm human. Yeah. And I felt better.
ASAP Ferg is one of my favorite modern rappers, but he's much more than an MC. He's a super creative person who designs clothes and dreams of having his own clothing house one day. And he's brilliant enough to pull it off. Believe that. We had a conversation that takes on a life of its own and flows far away from everything I planned to ask him. We go from talking about his hit Plain Jane, which I love, to welcoming ASAP Rocky home from jail time in Sweden, to talking about Jeff Koons and Damien Hirst and the meaning of modern art. I love this conversation. Let's dig in. It's ASAP Ferg on Toure Show. Plain Jane is a monster song.
Thank you.
And I want to hear about writing it, making it. Is it multiple takes? Are you punching in? Like, you know, and it's an interesting vibe to it because you talk about family,
right?
Talk about pain and trauma, but you also talk about hanging out, having fun. A lot of, in the chorus is crazy.
Thank you. I love the fact that you broke down everything I talked about because I feel like Plain Jane, people love it. I don't know if everybody knows why they love it or right. Like if they can pull out those parts, the trauma, the cookouts that we used to have to dodge gunshots and, you know, me going to Liberia for the first time and coming back and feeling like I had to do more for my community. Hermes Linka Feeder Village in Liberia, that came from me spending like $100,000 on a chain with Ben Baller. And then going to Liberia and seeing how much starving kids is out there. And I was like, I came back, I wanted to give all my jewelry away. And I was like, man, like a link can literally feed a village in Liberia. And
did you give some money to them?
I was going out there to put uniforms on kids. Because out there, like they can't go to school without uniforms. So I was going out there, put uniforms on the kids, and it was with this actual brand called Uniform.
Okay.
Chid Liberty is my partner's name. That he started this brand because when the Ebola outbreak happened out there in Liberia, a lot of people were scared to buy product out there. So he had a lot of materials and things like that. So he brought a factory, and he hired all of these women that didn't have jobs and things like that to make uniforms out of these materials. And he would use artists that has influences and just influence, period, to collaborate with, to sell clothing and partner up with Bloomingdale's. So that's what I did. I basically partnered up with him and Bloomingdale's to make a line with some of the material. I designed a line with Trap Lord and Uniform. We sold it. The money went towards putting some of the money went towards putting the uniforms on kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to talk about design because I know you're into that too. But yeah. Like, talk about making this record.
So Plain Jane.
Was the beat first you wrote in the studio or?
So I listened to Juicy J, Slob on My Knob, Like Corn on a Cob. I was in LA and me and my uncle was just listening to the radio and it just came on. And I'm like, yo, this song is amazing. Like, it hit me. It's like I had a epiphany. Like, nobody did the song over. And I'm like, why doesn't this happen twice in the song? Check in with me. And do you, everybody screams that. I mean, the whole song is like a hook, really.
Yeah,
or a long bridge. It's so sticky.
But it's
so
dope sticky. To start with the hook
yeah.
instead of... A lot of people start with a verse and then yeah. build into it. But when you yeah. start with it, that's the Beyonce loves to do that.
Right. But the song don't even have a hook. It's just really the suck a nigga dick or something. So that comes one time and then it's like back into the verse. But I don't even know if that's really a hook. And Juicy J said that's his first song that he put out and he wrote, like, which is intriguing to me because that's a huge song. So I went right to the, as soon as I got to the hotel, we were stuck in traffic. I had this idea just brewing in my head to write to the Slob on My Knob beat. And then I was like, man, I gotta make this shit new. I gotta make it feel like young. The young people got to own it. It got to be an anthem for the young people. And I got to say something. I had so much to say on this record because I just came back from Africa. I've been traveling the world, and I've always got the New York state of mind, but I'm, like, everywhere. I was like, yo. And I wanted to get an underdog to work on a beat. So I got Kirk Knight.
Okay.
Yeah, to do the beat over. I'm like, yo, bro, I got a banger for us to do. Kirk is, like... He's amazing. Like, he's amazing. I can't think of anything else. Like, a genius. And I feel like he doesn't get enough credit, or people don't even know the heights he can go with his music and his musicality. So when I approached him, I knew he would bring me different sonics and different sounds, but also understand the BPM and how important the 808s is and the drums and everything like that. And I laid the verse down, and... I recorded the whole thing. I didn't even put that footage out yet. I recorded the whole thing on my Apple, on my computer, on my laptop.
In the hotel?
No, in the inside the studio.
Okay.
The whole process of me and Kirk working on it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to put that on YouTube today. The whole process from start to finish of him making a beat, me going in there and reciting it, everything. And it was magic. At first, Kirk was like... yo, I think you should project your voice more. Like, I think you should, like, really rap, like, kind of, like, more aggressive and more, like... And I was like, nah. I wanted to do it laid back so everybody could feel like it's their tone.
The beat is really hype, but you are laid back on it.
Exactly.
You're not shouting. It's very... It is very, like, restrained.
Ride with the mob. Hum, do it. I'm in the booth like this, checking with me. And do your job. Ferg is the name. Pimbola did the chain. Tonal for the watch. Prezi playing Jane. Yeah. And I just let the oof, like the ad-libs go crazy. Yamagini chain. Rest in peace to my superior. Hermes link of feet a village in Liberia. TMZ taking pictures causing my hysteria. Mama see me on BET and start tearing up. Like, my mother see me on BET the first time, just start crying. She like, you don't tell me nothing. She don't know what's going on. Her friends got to tell her son is blowing up.
I mean, you come with that line, then you're talking about, you know, Uncle Psycho.
I'm start killing niggas. How you get that trife? I attend the Harlem picnics where you risk your life.
What is that? Harlem picnics where you risk your life. What is that?
All right, so growing up in Harlem, you couldn't go to a picnic without somebody getting shot. Or, like, somebody shooting in the air, crowds running and trampling people. And then everybody comes back. Like, everybody leaves, go across the street, and then they come right back across the street. Music gets turned back on, and it's almost like nothing didn't happen. And, like, you risking your life going to these cookouts, all for you to dress nice. Like, I used to make these chains back in the days. Like, I always been into design and making chains and jewelry and everything like that. And I used to, like, I was inspired by Pharrell and Nego. I used to make these big medallions. Back in the days, they didn't know what that was. Like, I was making it out of Swarovski crystals. And they didn't know if it was diamonds or not. So I was really risking my life. Like, five people I made chains for got robbed. Like, really robbed. Like, call me like, yo, Ferg, I just got robbed for my chain. And then sometimes I knew the niggas that robbed them. So I'm like calling niggas. I'm like, yo, you know, y'all got a chain. It's like a black Barb Simpson. And it, like, that's my boy. He live in the Bronx. They like, Ferg, we just got it. I'm like, give him back his chain. I did that.
Like, and you can get him his chain back like that?
I get sometimes I could do it, sometimes I can't. Sometimes it's just too late. You know what I'm saying? Where you risk your life. Uncle used to skimp work selling Knicks at night. Skimping. He used to skimp work. Like, he used to sell fake work or skimp it, like a little bit of whatever, and the rest cut. It's like whatever you cut it with. Uncle used to skimp work selling Knicks at night, but I was only 8 years old watching Nick at night. Uncle Psycho was in that bathroom bugging, knife to his gut. I hope that he don't cut him.
What is that?
My Uncle Psycho going wild. He's bugging, threatening to commit suicide.
You really witnessed that?
Witnessing that, yeah. Like, hope that he don't cut him. Suicidal thoughts brought to me with no advisory. Like, nobody could warn me that that was happening.
One thing I wonder, like, because being young and seeing, like, your uncle wanting to commit suicide right in front of you, like, why not make a whole song about that?
I did.
What
song? I didn't write a song about that in particular, but I wrote a song called Psycho. Yeah, you got to listen to it. It's on Always Strive and Prosper.
Okay.
Yeah, it's deep. Like, my family got involved, and like, my cousins is calling me like, yo, my students is in my class is like asking me about the record. And
what happened in that moment? Or is that happened a lot? Was he suicidal? Like, or just
I mean, his name is Psycho. So like, my uncle was just wild back then. Like, the best way I could describe him is like a light-skinned version of ODB.
Okay.
And
he have addiction?
Yeah, definitely dealing with addiction and just like, I guess early, like mental, I don't want to say illness, but just like going through things, like struggling mentally and, you know, I guess like his harsh realities, always getting into fights and things like that. But we all know it stems from something.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what it was, but yeah, I talk about it in a song called Uncle that I did with Clams Casino.
Okay.
Back in the days, and I talk about it in a song called Psycho and Let It Bang on Always Strive and Prosper. My uncle, and his voice is actually throughout the whole album.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, I just talk about, like, I'm talking as if I'm him and the song Psycho.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, this line, I'll fuck your bitch for the irony.
Yeah.
That line fucked me up.
Yeah, I'll fuck your bitch for the irony.
What does that mean to you?
It's just like getting that anybody who doubted me. And it's not even like literal, like to the sense of where it's like I'm directly fucking somebody's bitch, but it's like whatever it is, it's like I'm just going to succeed. I'm just like, a bitch could be like just another hit record. Like, I'm fucking a game, like, and I'm fucking it up. Like, if you didn't want me to succeed, that's what it is. That's your bitch. Like, I'm gonna succeed.
The first two thirds of the song, you talk about family, you're rhyming like hard sounds. Mm-hmm. And then that, I think it's in the third verse where you switch, right? You talk about, I'm in the sunken place. And then you do the easy, like a whole, like, long string of easy.
I'm in a sunken place, no Instagram, I'm watching TV. I think I trade my breakfast, lunch, and dinner for some KT. Please believe me, I see Riri, I'ma eat it like panini. Like, I'm just talking about, like, I'm just in this rut. I was in a rut, and such in a rut. And, like, at that time, I was going through things with my manager. Like, my accountant stuff wasn't really, like, my work ethic and everything that I imagined for myself just wasn't adding up. So, that was all of that coming out. So that's when I say I was in a sunken place. I was fucking depressed.
Right.
No Instagram or watching TV. Like, I'm focused. I think I trade my breakfast, lunch, and dinner for some Keti. That's how hungry I am. Like, I'm not even in no pussy. Like, I think I trade my breakfast, lunch, and dinner for some Keti. Please believe me. I see Riri. I'm going to eat it like panini.
But a lot of people will switch to a certain sound and do it for like four and then switch to another sound. But you really zoned in on that sound for, it's a good 8 or 12.
It flowed. I go dumb up in the bra, hit them walls like graffiti. I'll hit them walls like graffiti. Indian burns all up on a nigga wee wee. I think I need a foursome. Bella can do Gigi. Please believe me, it'd be easy if Renizi hook it all up on a Leezy.
I mean, in that one, you're really doing it internally.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not just on the four, but it's on the two as well.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about you've been hitting all those E sounds and then there's like an orgy of them.
Yeah. But then
were you thinking about
a more personal point, it was like, I think I need a foursome. Bella can do Gigi. It'd be easy if Renizi hook it all up on a Leezy. I'm talking about Rennell. Rennell is my girl, is cool with all of these girls. And it'll be easy if she could hook it up on a low, the Leezy. So it was like an insider, and whoever knew, like.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, did you write it quickly or does it take a while?
Nah, it didn't take. I wrote it in a hotel.
In what? An hour? A couple hours?
I don't know. I was locked in. Probably like an hour and a half, 2 hours. I'm not even sure, honestly.
When you rhyme, you go straight through? Are you punching in? Like,
I do both sometimes. Sometimes I write the whole song. Sometimes I write a verse and then I go freestyle a second verse. Sometimes I freestyle a whole song. I do that a lot. I freestyle the whole song a lot. Like, I freestyle Wham, which is a song I got with Made in Tokyo. That's on a new project. I freestyle. Did I freestyle Floor Seats? No, I think I wrote Floor Seats. But I freestyle the hook.
Floor Seats is another banger for you.
Can we before we go into Floor Seats, thanks everybody for allowing and making Plain Jane my biggest record of all times. 3 times platinum. I never would have even dreamed that I'll be coming out with a mixtape or an album or a single, a song getting played on the radio. I just didn't dream that big, let alone a song going 3 times platinum.
What did you think you would be at this point in life?
I always knew I'd be special, some type of creative, whether it be doing fashion, art, because I went to high school for art. I went to Art and Design High School, which my father also went to. My father did the Bad Boy logo. He did the Uptown Cast logo for Andre Harrell.
He made the Bad Boy logo?
Yeah. My Puff gave me the chain. He gave me the Bad Boy piece right here.
Wow.
Yep.
That's an iconic logo.
Yep, he did the Bad Boy logo, the Uptown Cats logo. So I just took after his footsteps. I was designing, doing graphic design, doing silk screen printing. I used to do like all D-Block shirts, all like Making a Band shirts, Loon shirts, Black Rob shirts. This is all like junior high school, going into high school.
How did you learn how to design?
I was just experimenting. I didn't know what I was doing. I just was having fun with it. I didn't know if I was, I didn't consider it designing. Like, I was just like, I knew I wanted something different. I knew I wanted shit that people ain't have. Like, I throw my jeans in a tub and I heard that bleach or Clorox could turn into different colors. So I'll try it and like let it dry and it'll come out dope. And I start doing my friends' stuff because they like what I did. And then people just started wanting to pay for stuff for me to do it. And then, like, oh, I'm designing. Oh, people want to buy stuff. Oh, I got a business.
So you weren't really driving and hustling. You were just artistically just...
What you mean by driving and hustling?
I mean, like, it sounds like I was trying things, and then people want to buy it. Instead of like, yo, I got to make some money. What am I going to do? I'm going to do this. And then try to flip it. Like, no, well, I was being creative and people dug it. So then they started buying it.
Yeah. And I was smart enough to provide the service. Like my father taught me how to first paint on t-shirts, because he used to do like Nicky Bond's t-shirts and like all of the big hustlers back in the days. They used to pay him like hundreds of dollars for like a drawing of them with their chain and a car logos and stuff on a car. So I mean on a shirt. So like he taught me that trait of like painting on sneakers and doing stuff on shirts. So I picked that up first. The moment I went to school with my shirt on, they're like, yo, that shit is crazy. You got your name on your shit and all of that, your favorite character on your shirt. I'm like, I did this. Word. I'm like, yo, bring a t-shirt and I'll do it for you for $30.
Bam.
Yeah, just basically pay for my supplies and stuff, and I just do it. And I was like, yo, people really like this. And it's taking me extra long. We're going to up that to like about $60. And then I'm finessing now. I'm like, all right, I could throw some crystals on there for like another $50. Now we up $100 per shirt. Plus the t-shirt. You got to get a good t-shirt. We got to go to like H&M or something. Get a t-shirt. American Apparel or something like
that. Right. The part of what's dope is that you're close with your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And he's able to help you, show you the way. You're able to watch him and learn from him.
Right.
And a lot of brothers don't have that.
For sure. Major impact in my life, idol. I didn't look up to like rappers and artists and things like that. I looked up to my mom and my dad.
Wow.
And my stepfather too. Like my stepdad is a business mind. He went to school, got his master's, accountant major. My mom also graduated college. And like my father was just the most amazing person ever. Artist, brought me Versace stuff when I was in junior high school, $800 sweaters and Gucci pants when I was in Catholic school. I have to pay like $1 for free dress day. I always like came through with like the new trip back then. But yeah, like he taught me how to hustle too. Like he taught me like how to create. And he taught me how to create a business and depend on myself, because I remember where he would like, before he had his own store, he would take shirts to Fat Joe's store in the Bronx and like drop off stuff and sell stuff and like come back and pick up his money, however he was doing it. He taught me how to do that. Like one time, you know, we was printing these. This is when like basketball teams was popping in jerseys and all of that. We like made these t-shirts with all the teams on it, like from the NBA and different colors and everything like that. And this was hot. Nobody was doing it. That was another thing he was good at too, like on the cusp of like a trend that hasn't even started. He was a trendsetter. So he would do like those things and he'd be like, yo, D, I'm going to give you like 12 shirts so you could sell it. Because I told him I'm selling shirts, but I'm just tired of like spending 3 hours on one shirt just to get $100. I'm like, I need to figure out like how to monetize like and make more money. He was like, all right, you ready for silk screening? So that's when I started silk screening and doing about 1,000 shirts.
Well, you said he taught you how to make it a business. So what are some of the keys to having a successful little business?
Well, he told me not to take any loans or like borrow money from people. Like he said, it'd be better if like you could use your own money, that way, you know, you ain't gotta owe nobody no money back. And I still kind of go by that, but like to this day, I mean, now that my name is so big, my name is equity, so I don't have to like put up money. People just want me to promote their shit and I'll get like some type of equity in their company or percentage. So like, you know, but where I was at, like, I understood why. So I'll save my money. That's why I said, like, being on Drake tour, I'll save my per diems. And, like, I'll start a brand, Trap Lord, off, like, $100. I'll send it to my girlfriend. She'll get, like, 24 shirts. I already had the silkscreen machines. So I had somebody print the shirts up, send it back to me on tour. I'll sell it. Now I'm, like, I got money now. Now I'm like, 200 up or something like that, 300 up. I send that over, do it again, re-up on more shirts. I'm eating ramen noodles, so I ain't really got to worry about buying an expensive meal. By the end of tour, I'm walking away off tour as tour support. It ain't even my tour. It's like really Rocky, and he brought us out. I'm walking away with like $7,000 off tour. All I asked, can I sell my merch? And they said, hell yeah. So that was really like how I started my business.
I mean, if you can design your own stuff, you'll never be broke.
Oh, I would never be broke. Even if I get broke, I'll know how to get rich again.
How would you do it?
I always say, like, if I was like a homeless person or whatnot, I would just, there's so many things you could do. I've read books about people painting rocks and like selling rocks. You know what I'm saying? Like, you go find a rock anywhere, paint that shit and, you know, write a special quote on it and sell it to somebody for at least $2. As simple as that. You stack that, you can have some rocks, you go get some t-shirts from like 28th Street, get some prints put on it. Now you got a business running. You're selling rocks and t-shirts. Set your table up. The cops are probably going to try to get rid of you. But, you know, you're going to make some money. And then at least you better get like, you know, $500 to at least get like some type of license to sell your stuff, like on 42nd Street. Now you got a full-blown business. You can hire some employees and get your shit moving, get it rocking. And now I ain't broke no more. At least I could get like a little room or something with one of my friends. You know, pay a little $500 a month, and we could get it cracking that way.
Start climbing back up.
Exactly.
So wait, before we get into floor seats, how'd you learn how to rhyme?
In school, junior high school, actually.
Where?
I went to IS-90.
Okay.
And in computer class, they used to make these do-nows and aims and things like that, and we used to have these journals in our books, and the teachers, and I thank y'all so much, teachers, if y'all hear this. They used to make us write, like, what's going on or what's on our minds. Like, it could be in a form of, like, a summary or a paragraph, whatever, but I used to write mine's like poetry because right. I just like the way it rhymed better. And, like, when I go up in front of the class to recite it, I knew it impressed the girls, so I was just like, man, I'm going to make it rhyme every time. So it started in that form, and then, like, I just love music. So I'm like, I got into battle rap. I was writing rhymes, not even on beats, just, like, to go out and, like, spit a 16 and do ciphers and things like that. My best friend Zani at the time, we used to write rhymes together. He used to, like, write rhymes on his computer all the time, like, type his rhymes. I used to come to his house, he'd be like, yo, I wrote, like, 4 16s. I'm like, damn, I only got 2. So he, like, pushed me to, like, write more. And I wasn't never really good on the computer, so I was still writing. He was just typing them joints out. And then one time he told me he rapped to Jada Kiss. And that, like, boosted minds. Like, Jada Kiss was everything. Rough Riders was everything to us back then. And then I ran into Styles P the day after that. So I was like... going crazy. So I rapped to Styles, and I came to him. I was like, yo, I rapped to Styles. And he was like, yo, that's crazy. Because we looked at ourselves like the Lox or the Rough Riders or whatnot. So it was dope. Because I love Styles' style of rapping and his lyrics. And Jada Kiss, he loved his voice, and he mimicked them a lot. So
how did you get better?
I got better by just studying the game. I remember when I first came into the game, and I said this in about like 2 other interviews, I used to do ad-libs like Rick Ross.
What do you mean?
Like, huh? Like ad-libs, like took his ad-libs. But I'm like, man, I gotta develop my own style. Like, it was just me wanting to be original. And I knew that wasn't gonna work because that wasn't me. I'm original. Like, I gotta be my own person. I took Master P ad-libs. Who, you'll hear some of my earlier songs. I'd be like, oh, that's from Master P. But the way I changed it was I put reverb on my voice to make it sound like I was falling. And it, like, reverb with a tail. So I'm like, oh. And then, like, the instead of, like, doing Master P thing all the time, I was just like, man, what do we do? Like, and, like, what do we do? Like, I started thinking, like, what is the nuances in the hood? Like, how do we call each other? And I was like, coo, coo. And then, like, the damn came, like, the derm. I just started adding different elements to it. And then the barks came from Q Dogs, actually. People don't know that. Like, I used to go to, like, a lot of Greek like parties and things like that with the Q dogs that be barking. You know, Q dogs, they call us like, hur, hur, hur. So it's just like.
Oh, you mean the Omegas?
Yeah, the Omegas.
Omega Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi, yeah.
Ad-libs are very important to your generation of MCs.
Yeah.
The older generation, you just spit a verse.
Some bars.
But for you guys, the ad-libs are extremely important.
Yeah, I think everything is important for me. The lyrics, the bars, the ad-libs, everything. I think the ad-libs, sometimes I don't want to put ad-libs on my stuff because I just want people to hear what I'm saying. But I know that people just, they love the ad-lib so much.
It makes it sometimes like you're kind of talking to yourself, like you're commenting on your own music.
That's exactly what it is. I'm hyping myself up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, woo, damn. I'm like, all right, that's right. Like, even the all right, that's right, like Pharrell hit it on key, like of what I was doing. He's like, oh, I get it. I exactly get what you're doing. You're different characters. He's like, you're at a Curtis Mayfield show or like a goddamn James Brown show, and it's the people in the crowd that's saying, all right, you go there. You go do that thing. Like, that's what I'm doing with my voice.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you said you were studying certain people. You talk about Master P, Rick Ross. Who are you studying for your verses, your diction, the way you spit?
I think about Eminem a lot, just on like vulnerability.
Okay.
And how he was so vulnerable.
Letting his real pain out.
Letting his pain out and letting that pain, being able to open up and people relating to him. And Biggie did the same thing. Like, I used to love Suicidal Thoughts and things like that. People like Biggie, people like Jay-Z, being a businessman. To me, Jay-Z is like Steve Jobs rapping or something.
At this
like,
point.
Or like a business person rapping. Right. Like, he's not even supposed to be rapping. Like, he's just a businessman, but he's giving us knowledge.
But he's like business. A brilliant, creative
businessman
who became rich.
Yeah.
And we still love the product.
Yeah.
And we.
Yeah. Like, even his voice was different. Nobody wanted to sign him. He doesn't look like your ordinary rapper. He's tall. Yeah, he
his
changed the
a little,
face.
His voice is usually a little higher than most MCs.
It's higher, and I think that since it was so different, it stuck out. Wayne, love Wayne. I love what
Wayne's
Wayne
the
did.
Man.
Wayne just went crazy. Like, I used to watch like Wayne a lot. Like, when I used to be making chains and like putting like the stones on the pieces and everything like that, I used to just watch his documentary, but on mute,
right,
just to see him and see the lifestyle and just have it playing on
before
repeat.
Before he went to jail, he was like unstoppable. Like
the God.
Like every mixtape.
Around the time he came out
feature,
with Pussy Monster and all of that. Like,
oh my God.
It was insane. Like he was tapping in, and I felt a spirit of Bob Marley in him.
Interesting.
Because I would study Bob Marley too, and I'd be like, they're trying to reach something different. Like, you don't feel like they're just doing like the subpar things or like just trying to, it's more spiritual. Like, I feel like it was a very strong spiritual presence in Wayne and Bob Marley, because it's just like, it was just, they was doing shit that was completely untouched. We never seen things they was doing before.
I mean, Marley's career and music is really special.
Very special.
And
his message.
He's everything. Definitely a person from a higher plane, or at least speaking to you from a higher plane.
He was on a different frequency.
Yeah.
Same thing with Wayne. I think he just tapped all the way in. And I think it's a certain time when an artist taps all the way in where nothing else matters. I feel like that's where I'm at right now. It's like everybody's talking about a party, and I'm like, nah. I'm trying to reach something. Like, I'm trying to touch something. I'm trying to, like, get something off. I'm trying to create a sound. I'm trying to, like, evolve, like, to the point where, like, I'm not comfortable doing normal shit. Like, I don't care to do, like, I don't care to bullshit and lollygag, like, or go on vacations. Only time I go on vacation is to sleep because I'm trying to get to where I'm trying to get to so bad.
Michelle Obama is one of the most inspiring, intelligent, graceful, unapologetically black people that I could think of. Just her existing makes me happy, makes me feel inspired, makes me want to be a little bit more like her every day because she seems to be just this extraordinary person. So if there's any sort of podcast about her, I want to listen to that. Life Kit from NPR has a whole episode on Michelle Obama. It's part of their whole Black Stories, Black Truths collection, where you'll hear stories of Black joy, Black resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account of what it means to be Black today from a unique Black perspective. There's a Code Switch episode about Dr. King, and I love Code Switch. There's It's Been a Minute about Eric Andre, who I love. We are not the same person, even though a lot of people think we look alike, even though he lives in my neighborhood now, but stop telling him he looks like me. Stop telling me I look like him. There's a pop culture happy hour about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I loved that show. That show meant so much to me. This is what Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR is all about. Stories about Black America and Black culture. Whole pop culture happy hour on Abbott Elementary, which is another amazing modern Black show. From Megan Thee Stallion to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, to the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott, to the Color Purple, the stories of Black Stories, Black Truths will take you inside the Black community and Black culture. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. Life doesn't happen in bi-weekly segments, so why should your paycheck? The money you earn every day can be in your hands today with Earn In. Earn In is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 a day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earn In app, verify your paycheck, and then you can access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips automatically repaid from your next paycheck. So if you need to make a repair suddenly, to get a new dress or a new shirt or shoes, you can do that. You can get the money that you've already earned but haven't been paid. You can get that now with Earn In. Make Earn In a part of your financial routine and join their 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earn In, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me peace of mind. It gives you the ability to access your money now. So download Earn In today. That's E-A-R-N-I-N in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earn In app, type Torre Show under podcast when you sign up, and it'll really help us. Torre Show under podcast. Earn In is a financial technology company, not a bank. Subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
You're trying to get to a higher level of music, you're saying?
I'm trying to tap in artistically to a higher level.
So what do you do to, like...
tap in?
Yeah.
I meditate. I study different artists. I go to the club and I'm listening to like what's out. I'm fulfilling a void. Like I'm trying to create the product that ain't here. I'm talking to the forefathers. I'm talking to Timbaland. I'm talking to Pharrell. I'm talking to Diddy. I'm talking to everybody who did something different and charged the game in a way it's never been charged, or in a game, I mean, in a way we didn't know that the game needed to be charged.
Talk to me about your meditation practice. When do you do it? How long do you do
it? I haven't been meditating lately just because I just haven't.
Busy.
Yeah, busy. And sometimes I fall off of it, but like.
But normally, what are you trying to do?
Normally, when I just need to be, like, the best way I could describe it is, like, you know, when, say we doing like this podcast, right? And people be like, yo, let me record the room air. So like it could just match up, I guess, like the sound, the sonic or whatever. I feel like we got to do that with our bodies. Like we need to like be cool with silence for a second. Like we got to like kind of like reset our bodies and like get used to silence again. Because it could be so much noise. It could be so much everything happening and losing sleep and everything like that. My life moves so fast that I have to sit down. Like I constantly got my label in my ear, and the label is a whole building. Constantly got like my whole team in my ear. Constantly got everybody in the world opinions about what Ferg should be doing in my ear. Oh, this, that, third, this, I have to come back down. I have to reset myself, refocus. Sit in silence, sit with my own thoughts, and just do nothing but just be.
How long do you do it for?
15 minutes. There's time that I've done it for 15 minutes, and it felt like I had to go longer, an extra 5 minutes, like if I really like feeling it. And I promise you, like, I used to look at meditation so stupid. Like, how does this shit work? It's retarded. I don't know how to do it.
Right.
I looked at YouTubes, this, that, and the third. I heard J. Cole talk about it. I read Russell Simmons' book on meditation. And it works. It works wonders.
I mean, when you get in the groove, I mean, I do it sometimes. Right. And when you get in the groove... Mm-hmm. You know, you're really in the moment, mm-hmm. and it really does tap into something very deeply relaxing.
Yeah.
Like spiritually relaxing.
I don't know if I've tapped in that deep, but I know what I feel after. And what I feel after is like, I just feel a sense of a weight lifted off of me. There's times I felt very high strung. And just stress, like you know how stressful this game could get. Oh,
life.
That's why people be high and strung out and on drugs. And that stress be coming out of your pores all kind of ways. People just start eating bad. People start, like, looking bad. People start taking drugs. People just drink. Everything. It comes out of you. It's going to come out some type of way.
Yeah.
So I think resetting is, like, rebalancing yourself and, like, poising yourself, like not poison, but like poise.
Getting poise for yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's
you seem very balanced, like just like mellow.
Yeah, I try to keep it that way because it's so easy. I'm a Libra. I don't know if that got anything to do with it. We a scale. But it's so easy, I think, for a human being.
I mean, there's a lot going on in your mind. Like you talk about the label, the design. I could do this. I got my girl. I got it. But then you like are like chill.
And then also, too, like I have to be chill because once you start wearing it on your face starts to look like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I ain't trying to be walking around with the crazy looking, scrunched up, like mad. Mm-hmm. You see people with the mean mug and all of that because they've been mad so long.
Mm-hmm.
And you see people that look relaxed and everything, they probably eating good foods, they probably relaxed, they probably in sun, they putting good things and good vibes and good energy into their bodies.
You talked about Eminem's vulnerability. And, you know, when we as men can be vulnerable and have the courage and the strength to allow yourself to be vulnerable, that's a really amazing place.
Right.
And for a lot of black men, being vulnerable is really scary because we're already getting beat down by the world. We're already underestimated, underrated, undervalued.
Right.
So being like vulnerable is like, well, damn, like how am I gonna? But if you can get to that,
it's freedom.
Really... Yes.
That's exactly what it is. It's freedom. And I think we're getting better with that as a people, as a black people. I think we're getting better with that. Like, just me hearing Jay-Z saying he took therapy. That's our biggest rapper ever. I was like, oh, it's okay to talk to somebody.
That and the whole 444, that song was very vulnerable and real.
It gave us a side to him that we didn't know. All right, we know you're the boss. We know how you made business moves and transactions, and that's cool. But how do we get there? And like, what are the trials and the tribulations it takes to get to where Jay-Z is at?
I mean, as hard as he can be, he'll let the song cry. He'll like basically cry about shooting his brother on the first album.
Yeah.
So he'll let it out. And like, you know, I like that you're talking about letting it out and not being afraid of being vulnerable. Cause like you said, it's so liberating. We want to be like, yeah, I'm the man. Everything is good. I got this. Mm-hmm. I'm handling life. But life is hard.
I mean, it's like almost like after you talk about it, it's just like you talked about it. There's nothing. It's like when I'm like scared to wear like, you know, I mean, I ain't scared to like do shit, but like you get like a little feeling of when you're doing something different. And like when I make like the Evel Knievel outfits and the pants and stuff, and I'm like, yo, the world is either going to hate this shit or they're going to love it. But I don't give a fuck. Like to me, that's being vulnerable and opening myself up to the world and dressing the way I want to dress and expressing myself the way I want to do it. So like when I first started doing it, like it's like, Ferg, what the fuck you got on? But then like now I got it on and, you know, now people are wearing more bell bottom pants and things like that. It's cool. When I was doing months ago, it was crazy, but now it's like, oh, that shit is drippy.
Are you vulnerable enough to like cry when you feel that? Or would you hold it in?
Cry when I feel what?
Like when you feel like that sad.
I've cried and I've like I didn't think I could cry because and what concerned me was I was becoming so busy that I went to my first girlfriend. She was my first. I went to her funeral because she passed away.
Oh wow. When was that?
That was like a year and some change ago.
Oh wow.
And when I went there, I couldn't cry because literally, I had somebody that was waiting for me outside to finish some interview and documentary thing I was doing. So I'm like, hold up. Like, I got to slow my life down. I wasn't able to cry. I wasn't able to feel. Literally, I'm going back to work. I'm tired. This is fucked up. Like, I want to feel. Like, so I started focusing more on myself. I started like kind of not driving myself crazy with work and everything like that because I just wanted to get back to what matters, like what really matters. And that's when I start thinking more about purpose and intention of things because now time can't be wasted. And when I went to my father's gravesite, I cried, and I didn't know that I would, or like if not, I would have been troubled if I didn't. And I've cried, and I cried, and then I was like joyfully crying because I'm like, yes, I cried. Like I can't believe it. Like I feel something
and
good.
I let it out.
I'm human, yeah. And I felt better.
Well, when Yams passed,
yeah,
that must have been hard for you.
Very hard.
I mean, the deaths that you just mentioned, and. The funerals, you talked about what you learned, what you got from those moments, how you grew.
Right.
So, I mean, I imagine the Yams death is probably the hardest, maybe with your dad, probably the hardest that you've dealt with. So what did you learn? How did you deal? How did you grow from that?
It was hard and it's still hard because I'm still learning from that experience. Like as I climb and I get and I'm on my voyage and I'm experiencing different things. I question a lot of things. Even before I came in the game, I would question things like, yo, why, you know, these guys got so many hits and they look strung out or different things like that. Or like, how is that possible? But I can see why. And like firsthand it happened with my brother Yams. It's like, what I say in Tattered Angel? I say something about access. Like us being who we are, we have access to everything. We can either self-destruct or we can glow up. Like, and it's just all about choices, about walking this thin line. Like, you can make one wrong move and just be in a ditch that'll be hard to get out of. Or you could keep making the right moves and dodge the bullshit. That's literally what it is like being an artist, for me, at least. Like, I tread lightly. Like, I'm not, like, even, like, trying to, like, I don't play. Like, I'm, like, very, I try to be on point. And, you know, Yams, he was battling something that really, like, took him off his square, and it just, you know, it ended up in death. And that really made me, like, okay, you could die from making the wrong decisions.
So that made you change your life? How?
I mean, it just made me more conscious of it, of the possibilities of, like, just as easy to get into shit and as hard to get out of. Like, the trappings of being anybody, not even just the artist, but just the trappings in life.
Have you seen Rocky since he got out?
I did. I seen him soon as he got out.
Yeah? What was that like?
That was amazing. I was so tired because I was...
Were you, like, at the airport or when he came home, or where was it?
No. So I met him at this house he was staying at, and I had to fly from Hungary to London, from London to New York, New York to L.A. And I landed in L.A. at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Just to go see him?
It was a party. Yep, to see him. It was a party, a huge party we had for him. And, like, I brought some people. I called people. We lit. We go to the party. I pull up, like, 4 o'clock in the morning. The cake is already, like, slammed. Like, it's, like, plates everywhere. It's cups everywhere. You see girls leaving and shit. So I'm like, damn. But I got a moment to, like, share with my brother. He was hype. He was still up. We hugged. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm glad you're home. And it was just a very, very dope moment. And we stayed up until, like, 9 o'clock in the morning, where we went to Sunday service to see Ye and
Kanye.
Everything, yeah.
What were you going through when he was locked up in Sweden?
A lot. People don't, and what that made me realize is, like, when your family member is locked up and when your friends is locked up, like, you're locked up.
Yep. Yep.
Like, I see how that shit could happen, like, the trickle-down effect. It's because everybody was reaching out to me. I'm, like, the guy people was like, yo, all right, how can I get to Rocky? I'm, like, I'm the voice, really, for Rocky. Like, I'm using my platform to post them every day. And it was crazy, too, because, like, you feel like you can't even be having fun. Like, I felt like, man, I can't be having fun.
Feel
fans
guilty.
Gonna come at me for having fun.
Yeah.
They're gonna be like, yo, motherfucker, you having fun outside and your friend is locked up?
Yeah.
Like, you can't even have fun properly.
Felt guilty.
Yeah, you feel guilty for being out.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
were you talking to him while he was inside?
They wasn't allowing us to talk at first. They wasn't allowing him to talk to anybody. But then, They allowed us to talk, and I spoke to him, and we spoke for about 2 hours. And he was talking about how he's seen himself on TV in jail and shit, and how I'm just like, yo, you got the world going crazy. Like, this shit is nuts. This is not even a just you thing. This is a world thing.
What was he talking about?
He was talking about, he said, man, everybody in here got a $150 on their face. I'm like, word.
You mean a slash?
A slash across their face. He said, but everybody's spirits is like up. It's like life as I'm talking to that, like, smile every day. And they asked me if I'm good and things like that. He's like, it wasn't no ill will towards him. He was in good spirits. He just wanted to be home.
I mean, they made it like, you know, his lawyers made it like, yo, he's going through hell. It's cold. It's this and that.
I mean, we wanted him to come home.
Of course.
And it probably was.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
Because all of those things, like, he probably, I'm pretty sure, like, those people was, you know, some of those people was treating him nice, but at the same time, you're still in jail.
Right.
Like, you're not home. Like, you're still locked up. You have to listen to when somebody wants you to eat shit, do everything,
go
in your cell. Like, man, I hate working for somebody else. I could imagine a CEO telling me to, when I could shit and fucking do shit.
Right.
Yeah.
When did y'all meet?
Me and Rocky met, I had to have been like 16.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, meeting him was critical to you becoming an MC, right? Like, that's part of your...
Well, doing it professionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because he was more so on the rapping thing and, like, doing it as a career. I was doing a rapping thing as a hobby, and I was, like, really trying to push me, like, getting my own fashion brand and doing art.
So that was the dream, be a fashion designer.
Yeah, that was a dream. That was one of the dreams, yeah.
Bigger than being a rapper.
Yeah, the dream was never to just be a rapper. Like, the dream was just to be, like, a figure, like, that made change. Because I would pick, and the reason why I say that is, like, I used to pray, and I used to be like, man, I used to pray to God for all the girls. Like, I'm pretty sure every dude did pray for all of the girls. I used to want to be a huge figure. I used to see Birdman on his tour bus with, like, sweatsuits with, like, stacks of money and jewelry. I'm like, man, I need an assistant that's going to bring my jewelry back. Like, Birdman has his nephew or whoever he was had bringing his big stone rings and going to the Gucci store and spending all of his money. Like, I wanted that, but I didn't know what was going to get me there. And I also would look at Karl Lagerfeld documentaries, Yves Saint Laurent, Keith Haring, Picasso, Basquiat movies, Francis Bacon, Jeff Koons, Raf Simons, Versace. Who killed Versace? Jimi Hendrix. Gandhi, Malcolm X. Like, I used to just study all of these people, and I used to read books on them. Elvis, Liberace, Elton John, you could go on and on. Cameron. Like, I would just try to tap in and see what these people was, what gave them their charisma and what made them tap into what they was doing.
What'd you learn from Jeff Koons? Because I love him and his work and how
I love his work too.
How he flips it and he makes just fantastic toys for rich people.
Well, I think he's one of the biggest artists.
Yeah, he is.
Of our time, like if not the biggest artist, but even Damien Hirst too. Like,
yeah,
they just Damien Hirst. Work was dark to me. It reminded me of Francis Bacon, but he did like installations with sharks and
a shark just hanging out from aldehyde. Yeah. Just like, I love that.
I'm like,
piece.
How are you hanging this shark? Or how are you?
Or a sheep.
Yeah, or a sheep.
Just sitting there.
Like, how are you? I don't see any bubbles
right.
around it.
Like, right. Right.
You know
right.
what I'm saying? Like, or like the pill room, like,
right.
which like is something different to me now. Being older, like I like now is I can ask some questions about stuff like that. Before I would see it and be like, this shit is just cool, but like now that shit meant something for him to do that.
Yeah.
Even like Jeff Koons, like the huge the glass hearts and
yes.
The
puppy.
Yeah, the puppy or the rabbits and the bubble, I mean the balloon silver rabbits.
Yep.
What I learned from Jeff Koons is team.
Team. Having a team.
And delegating.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that from an early age because I was like, man, he's a big artist. He's not necessarily touching every canvas.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure he studied Andy Warhol and the whole factory.
No doubt.
Vibe, because Andy Warhol started that where, like, he would have people come silkscreen for him. All the Elvis canvases with the colors and all of that. Like, he's more of a director.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a new way of creating art.
Yeah. Hell yeah. They say Picasso was the most important artist of the first part of the century and
well, that's
Warhol.
Isn't that arguable with Matisse? Picasso and Matisse is going at it.
I would say Duchamp is incredibly important for the first half of the century.
Okay, I got to study him.
I mean, Duchamp, he took a urinal and put it in a gallery, and he said, art. And they were like, how is that art? Because you signed your name on? He said, it's a ready-made. It's done. I went to see it with my wife when she was my girlfriend. Yeah. We went to France, and we saw it. And I was like, that's not art. And she was way more into art than I was. And she was like, yeah, it is. And we argued for 3 days.
So how is that art? How is that considered art?
Because art is everywhere.
Everything.
It's everywhere. And like, you know, it doesn't have
math is art.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be some thing that an artist created that only certain individuals can make. Like, anything can be art.
Yeah. Is that the way you look at it is your perception?
Yeah. I mean, now, like, is it good art or bad art? That's a whole other conversation. You could say, well,
But it's perception still.
Yeah.
As what you see as good and bad, because people may consider Basquiat painting tires white, not art.
But like Warhol takes that aesthetic and takes the second half of the century and just blows
so
it up.
So he was inspired by him.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You think he's painting Campbell's soup cans. He's like, anything can be art. Why not a Campbell's soup can?
Who's your favorite top three artist?
Oh, my God. Top three. I mean, Picasso's got to be up there.
Definitely.
I love Jeff Koons. I love Damien Hirst. I love Basquiat to death. I love Romare Bearden.
Haven't heard of him.
Oh, Romare Bearden is probably the greatest black visual artist. Harlem guy. Made collages.
Wait, he makes the collages.
Yes.
I know who he is.
Yes.
I've seen his work.
And like
beautiful work.
William Johnson, another great black artist. I mean, I love Kehinde Wiley's work.
Kehinde, dope. He painted some of my friends early on. That's how I found out about him. And plus, he looks like Ice Cube to me.
I love Kara Walker.
Okay, I have to. You have to send me some of these names.
No doubt, no doubt.
Yeah. More the blacks, because yeah. I know like the master whites.
Kara Walker does some amazing stuff where like it'll be like a white wall and she'll put like two-dimensional black images, like the color black, like out of slavery. And it'll be like crazy violent, crazy sexual, crazy fucked up moments that probably happened for real in slavery. Because she's fucked up. And she's depicting it and putting it in the middle of the MoMA or the Whitney, and people coming in to like, you know, get their little art fix. And she's like stabbing you in the eye with like, you know, this is how it used to be. Like,
what type of art would you put in your house, and like why?
Son, I mean, you know, I would buy whatever I could afford, but I would definitely get some beard in. I would definitely have. I would love to have Damien Hirst. You know, Warhol's amazing. You know, I love Richard Avedon.
Haven't heard of
his photographs. He's just a great photographer.
But some of these artists, right? Do you feel like they bring certain moods?
Oh yeah,
and spirits and energy into your house.
Yeah,
and that's what I be like. I'm getting into collecting art too. So like, I think about that. I think about moods, like. And what I want to wake up and see, and how is it going to inspire me or move me for the day?
Yeah. There's certain pieces, let's say Basquiat, certain pieces will like lift you up because there's an exuberance to it, an excitement to it. And there's certain pieces that will freaking drag you down.
Yeah, like that last painting he did.
Which one?
Which was this skeleton horse.
Yes, yes.
It's a beautiful painting, but I couldn't put that in my house.
Yo, I used to date a girl who had a heroin issue before we were together.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to see that painting, and she was like, that's what it feels like to be on heroin.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. Because that's what he was kind of trying to evoke, like riding with death.
Yeah.
And she was like, I see it. Like, that piece freaks me out.
Freaks me out, too.
In a good way.
When
still.
I was younger, like, I'm like, that shit is cool. Like, that shit is probably going for mad bread. But you could afford that shit, or like, I can't afford that shit. But I'm just saying, that shit, I couldn't put that in my house.
I mean, a Romare Bearden, to me, I would love to have something like that because it's so beautiful and vibrant and dynamic, and it's us.
Yeah.
It's really the spirit of black people in the way he makes it, in what he's talking about, and what he's showing, you know, and the pieces will be incredibly detailed so you can look at it every day and see something a little different. And like, you know, that I would really love to be able to look at it over and over and to see something a little different each time.
Yeah.
You know?
I love Rothko.
Yeah, yeah.
Rothko is, just because it's like, even if he's trying to evoke violence or emotion or whatever, whatever it is, it still can be like, it's like water to me.
Yeah.
Because it's just color.
There's this brother in L.A. named Mark Bradford.
Yeah.
Who's dope. He's one of the dopest current living black artists.
Yeah.
Definitely check him out. But like, Rothko is so powerful and it's so simple.
Yeah.
And it's another one that's like, is this art? I just put one like or two audacity. Colors on it. Yeah.
But it's like the blends, the color blends, like the black on black, the matte black with the faded black, the blues that just goes into like the oranges and the yellows. Like that, I'm pretty sure Rothko and inspired Hype Williams videos and color just that whole time and mood. Like, Rothko's had to be on Hype Williams mood boards.
Yeah. There's this sister, Amy Sherald, who's crushing it right now. Amazing portraitist.
Amy Sherald.
Yeah, remember when Barack and Michelle had their official portraits come out and Kehinde did Barack's and Amy Sherald did Michelle.
Oh, wow.
And it's dope. Amazing. She's dope. She's dope.
That's amazing.
Let's go back for a second to MCing. What's the difference between a good MC and a great MC?
A good MC just knows how to rap. A great MC has integrity. He has intention and purpose. a great MC is Jay-Z.
What's your top three or five?
Jay-Z.
Number one all time.
I don't know if it's out of Jay-Z and Biggie.
Okay.
Jay-Z, Biggie, and I would just say Eminem.
That's your top three? I'm mad at you.
Yeah.
Where's Nas?
I love Nas to death. I mean, but you didn't give me a top five.
Well, if it was five, is he four or is he right in there?
He'll be in there, yeah.
What about Rakim?
See, I got to study more. I'm young. I'm 30. But I know he's the god. I've heard he's I know Rakim is known for breaking the mold of an artist.
I mean, Rakim, to me,
he came after Run DMC.
Yes.
And he showed us, well, Run DMC showed us that we didn't have to wear costumes and shit.
Right.
And, like, to look like what I look like now with Knievel pants and shit.
Run DMC takes the routine era.
Yeah.
And makes it a little more complex, right? But it's still kind of routines, right? Yeah. They're doing the verses flows, together.
Yeah. It's rock, and then it's higher. So then, yeah, like that. Like
Peter Piper rock, picked peppers. Yeah. Run Rock rhymes, right?
Yeah.
But then Rakim
just fucked it all up.
Complexity. Yeah. It was a different level of complexity than everybody had ever done to that point. And I think everybody after him is his son in a way.
And he his son.
I mean, facts. As an MC.
Yeah, facts. He's the father of the style. Like,
yes, internal rhymes.
Of us rapping.
Multisyllabic.
And style and flow.
Complexity.
Complexity. He's talking knowledge. He wore a 7 on his jacket, Dapper Dan jacket.
Like, and talking about MCing.
Yeah. Yeah, facts. Factual. Yes. I will have to concur.
What is the most instructive failure that you've had? The failure that you learned and grew the most from?
As far as music or just...
anything in life.
Failure. For me, there's no such thing as failure.
Okay.
Because, like, there's only lessons and no losses. And that's the attitude I try to have. And in fact, the more failure or more times we fall, it just makes us stronger. So, like, I don't consider it a failure. I just a minor setback for you to make a major comeback.
Right, right. Yeah. What do you want for your next 4 to 5 years? What's your big plan or your big dream?
I want to build a clothing line. I want to really... I love what Kanye did with Yeezus and, like, sneakers and all of that, creating his world. I'm continue to create my world and what that is and show people I could use different mediums to express myself as an artist.
To be
beyond music.
You want to move into being a clothing designer.
Designer, period. Designer of great music, a curator, a DJ, I design already, so I was I designed these pants.
Would you design furniture?
I designed this watch. I designed a rug in Nepal. I took my logo, which is the Devoni logo. It was a childhood brand that I started where I was making belts and leather goods. And like I'm starting to do like more stuff with it, home goods, because I just brought my first house. So like I just wanted to decorate it with my own art. I wanted to have the most exclusive shit. So it's like, you know, the way I could do that is just create it. Make my own couches, make my own pillows, make my own rugs, make my own dishes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where are you going with that next?
I'm signed with Adidas. If you go on Google, you'll see like both of my shoes I did. I want to make my own silhouette, like beyond Adidas and Jordan and all of that. Like I would love to just make a shoe that, like I love what Tyler is doing with his brand and golf and all of that.
What is the silhouette that you
people
are
think
talking
Tyler
about?
Is so silly and
no
crazy
no.
He's bugged
brilliant.
Out.
He's brilliant.
He's a genius.
Tyler,
and that's my friend.
Brilliant. What is the silhouette that you are thinking about for your Ferg sneaker?
I don't know what that is yet. I'm still like pondering about it, but like the shoe business is just such a great business, and everybody loves shoes, and I would love to be a part of that.
Why'd you go with Adidas instead of Nike?
they were just the ones I grew with. I met them early on when Rocky did a shoot with them and Jeremy Scott, and we just kept the rapport going. They supported. They brought me out to like different shows and paid me to fly to Russia and do things and see the world. So, you know, they got me in bed early, so.
You know, you have accomplished a lot. You're dealing with a lot. You're succeeding at a lot of different things. What is your superpower?
My superpower is vision. I have vision. I can see. What I say? How I started off, Tweet. Oh, you're not here? All these rappers, I'm going to put them in dishes. I'm going to kill all these rappers. I'm going to put them in dishes. They was rocking with your ass, so they made a decision. A lot of... I'm thinking of the vision. I'm trying to think of these lyrics I said. But basically, I got the vision. I got the vision for myself and others. Is that a Jay-Z line?
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know. He said, I say a big verse, I'm big enough, my brothers. I'm big enough to do it. Yeah. I don't think he said vision though, but I got the vision for myself and others, meaning I can see very far. Very far. Like it's a talent. I think I've studied people enough to know tribes of people. Like I know that there's a certain type of tribe. I'm with a certain I know myself. I know who I'm with. I'm with like Busta, Missy, Ludacris. Like David Bowie.
Creative.
Very creative.
Extra. Out there. Pushing the boundaries.
Right. Exactly. That's a tribe of people. And like Wayne has a tribe of people where it's like Wayne, like Young Thug, Little Uzi. Like in a
hardcore
bunch of like that.
Energy.
Exactly. Like rock and roll energy.
Rock and roll.
Yeah. And then you also have like the Pharrell, which is like Dallas Austin, like Lenny Kravitz.
Brilliant, creative, kind of young, even though you're grown.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's interesting you put energies. Yourself with Bowie.
Yeah.
Because he's the man.
Bowie is the man. Bowie is the man. He changed the game.
I mean, what I see, like what he does, what he did... creatively, sartorially, musically, like totally change up every album and shit. Like,
I don't know what sartorially means.
Clothing.
Okay.
In terms of clothing. Like rappers don't usually do that.
Right.
In terms of like, you know, like painting your face or like changing completely. Right. And like.
I painted my face for the first fashion week I participated in. The first Kanye West fashion show I had my face painted. It's a picture with me, Jay-Z, Travis Scott, Kanye, and I think Nas, and I have my face painted.
So 10 years from now, are you just designing and not rapping and moving into here's the House of Ferg, you know, or whatever it's called, and like
I think
I'm more like Lagerfeld than
I think I will always be rapping as long as I got something to say. Like the moment I ain't got nothing to say, and I'm pretty sure I'm always gonna have something to say. Like, I'm always going to be rapping then.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
This is a very good interview. One of the best.
Thanks to my man Ferg for a great interview, and thanks to you for listening. Torre Show gives you fuel to power your dreams because you can use your dreams like a rocket ship to blast you into a life you never imagined. You can make your dreams a reality. And maybe this show can help. I'm on Twitter at Torre and on Instagram at Torre Show. Please leave a review on iTunes. It really helps. And tell your friends about the show. Torre Show is written by me, Torre, and produced by Jackie Garofano. Our photographers are Chuck Marcus and Shanta Covington. And we're distributed by DCP Entertainment. And we will be back, no doubt, next Wednesday with another amazing person. Because the man can't shut us down.